Welcome to Commons and Chronicles, the podcast where we talk about all the best Creative Commons and reusable open game license content. If you need resources for your creative writing, game design, or you just love lore, Commons and Chronicles is for you. Hi everyone, this is Klaatu. You're listening to Commons and Chronicles. Apologies for last week. I did not put an episode out because I was moving to the South Island, which is a salient point to this episode because I'm here on the South Island as I record this, sitting in a rented flat with no central heating in -4 Celsius weather. Luckily, I have a wood-burning stove, which is a very specific kind of heating device. It is unique from a fireplace because it is designed specifically to generate heat and then distribute that heat throughout the space. So the cottage that I'm renting is a four-room cottage, I guess you could say. It's got a lounge, then a little office, then a little bedroom, and then a kitchen. So I guess that's four rooms. Bathroom, obviously, but yeah. So the sort of the central space of the cottage is there are doorways, but it's more or less connected, and the wood burner is in the center of the cottage, and that's it. That is your heating for the cottage as it was built. Now I have more stuff coming through a moving company, so I will have electric space heaters eventually, but for now I'm living in a space that was built 100 years ago or so, and the source of heat is this wood burning stove, which is not 100 years old. The stove is new, which is nice because it has a fan built into it. So you build your fire, and your goal is to get as much heat and life out of the logs that you put into the wood burner as possible. And there are lots of specific tricks to this that we're still learning about because I've never done this before, and my partner has been researching sort of the best way to maximize all of these resources. And the theory right now is that you build the fire top down, so you put your kindling and everything sort of on top of your logs, which if you've ever built a fire at a camp or for a bonfire, none of this makes any sense, right? This is not how you do it. You start the fire at the bottom of the pile, and it sort of burns and consumes things as it rises, and that's how fire works, right? Well, in this case, no. You put your kindling and stuff on top of the logs, and you start burning, and the fire sort of travels down your stack, and it does so as it basically decimates the thing under it. And so it turns it into, well, really just a fine ash. I mean, like, at the end of a fire in this wood-burning stove, you have the finest and most consistent ash you'll ever see. I've seen campfires, I've seen bonfires, and at the end of the experience, you've got charred wood in the fire pit. Not here. You have just the ash, ideally. Sometimes you'll have bits of wood. But that means you've done it wrong, because you've not maximized, you've not gotten all the possible heat out of that object. So reducing a big stack of logs and kindling down to a fine powder is a very, very surreal and strange thing to do. But you come to appreciate it very quickly when the weather drops to -4 Celsius. You start to understand why this is an important principle to really truly get. The wood burner, as I said, has a fan built into it, so it once you get the central portion of the wood burning stove hot enough, the fan clicks on and starts distributing all that heat out into the cottage. So that's what I'm up against, and why all of this matters is because today I wanted to talk about one of my favorite topics, the ice magic, winter magic. Specifically, from Kobold Press, there's a publication. It's the, I think, the 19th in their series, apparently. I I had no idea they had 19 of these things, but it's within their series of Deep Magic releases, which I've talked about some of the Deep Magic releases previously. I think I covered possibly Rune, the Deep Rune Magic, and probably something else. I'm not really sure what I covered, but there have been a couple of things that I've talked about. I know that. But this one specifically is Ice Magic, and I've talked, or Winter Magic rather, and I've talked about other publications that have done ice themed magic before, because it is something that I'm really I'm quite fond of. But I want to talk specifically about Winter Magic right now because of my surroundings, my condition, and also because this publication, this release, is really, really outstanding. It's funny because it's really only 11 pages long or something like that, maybe even less after you account for title pages and things like that. But it just packs so much into it. You'd be crazy not to get it if you're running a winter-based campaign, and not everyone is. But I think it's a fun setting. I think that the icy wastelands of the north, whatever that may be in your world, it just makes for a good setting, because it doesn't assume that just getting up in the morning and going on an adventure is that act alone is a fight for your life. You don't just get up and go on an adventure. You have to get up and fight the cold and you have to see through the snow as you're walking, and you have to find the path through a blizzard, and so on. So I think setting an adventure there is something that puts your adventurers through their paces. Now, the beautiful thing about this release, Winter Magic, is that it's kind of everything you would need, I would think, for a player's guide. It could be your player's guide for whatever setting you are throwing your players into, almost. Obviously, it's centered around magic. That's obvious. But, I mean, there are different elements to even that I think would be worth sort of handing out to players, so that, I mean, certainly your spellcasters would appreciate the winter-themed spells, but there's other stuff in there as well. And one of the first things that you get to when you crack this open is the Primal Path. The Primal Path in 5th edition is a barbarian option. I forget when you get to choose it, and I don't have it on me. I don't have the player's handbook on me, but there are a couple of primal paths, and I'd never really found one. I downloaded a couple that I was looking at to try to make sort of a shamanistic barbarian was my goal. And I wish I'd had this publication then, because this is exactly what I was looking for. A Primal Path, the Blizzard's Heart. So you're a barbarian, obviously, sort of, who's used to the winter storms and so on. And you get certain abilities along this path. So at 3rd level, for instance, you get to the Stinging Snow ability. And while you rage, snow swirls around you in your space. You can see through the snow to make melee attacks without penalty, but you have disadvantage on ranged attacks. For a barbarian, that's probably not going to be that big of a deal. Other creatures that rely on sight have disadvantage on ranged attacks against you, and you have a +2 AC against melee. That's at 3rd level. At 6th level, you get Omen of the Storms. Beginning at 6th level, you can cast Sleet Storm, centered on yourself once. You are immune to the spell's effects. The save DC for this spell equals 8 plus your proficiency plus your wisdom. You must finish a long rest before using it again. 10th level, you get Icy Blows. While raging, your melee attack weapon deals additional cold damage equal to your wisdom modifier. Now that's super cool. I love that one. And then at 14th level, you get Whirl of Ice. While raging, you can use your action to make a melee attack against any number of creatures within 5 feet of you. Make separate attack and damage rolls for each target. So that's very cool. You also get a Winter Domain for clerics, and that's obviously really, really handy for making your cleric fit into an icy setting. But it doesn't stop there. They also provide a warlock patron, the Frozen One. Your patron is the embodiment of winter. This is typically a mask of Boreas, but powerful ice maidens, ice devils, and other creatures associated with the cold can serve as patrons. Your patron seeks to immerse the world in eternal winter or bring about some similar fate. While you may not share this goal, you have sworn fealty to this being, and you act as its agent to spread winter wherever you roam. Now give me a break. If this is not the coolest thing I've ever read, I mean, you are basically Fenris Wolf or Eustace from Narnia. Not that anyone wants to be Eustace, but I mean, come on, this is the best. And I guess after that, it's mostly, I mean, there's a couple of different things about what a warlock can do, but I don't want to get into the details here. This is worth purchasing if you're really curious about this stuff. It's absolutely worth looking at. They have a couple of different spell levels that they provide magic for. They go up to really 5th, but technically 6th. They've got a 6th level spell in there as well. They also have a rune ritual. So, in keeping with the Cult of Ragnarok's scheme to persuade people of the Northlands about the approaching end times, this ritual deluges an area in sustained wintry weather. The weather kills livestock and unprepared people and buries the location under tons of snow and ice. Creatures with rune mastery, Hagalaz or Izaz, see deep magic to rune magic, learn the Fimbulwinter's Advent ritual as a rune mastery power at 11th level. And Fimbulwinter's Advent is a transmutation ritual, casting time for 4 hours, range is 1 mile, components verbal, somatic, and material. And listen to this material requirement. An animal from the target area killed with cold damage during the ritual, plus diamonds worth at least 500 gold points. Of course, they have to monetize it, but yeah, it's animal sacrifice. Duration up to 7 days. This ritual calls upon one of Boreas's agents to inflict disastrous winter weather on a settlement for up to 1 week. Inscribing a circle of runes and sacrificing an animal from the settlement by freezing it to death within the circle creates a sympathetic link to the settlement in which the animal lived. A massive storm builds over the ritual site and moves toward the linked settlement. The caster can specify the amount of time the storm spins around the affected area. So pretty powerful, powerful stuff. I love how it ties back into their rune magic book, because that was definitely one of my favorites. So talking about some of the spells here, you've got your typical sort of like first level. Here's an obvious one, because it's actually literally the first spell in the list as well. First level evocation for druids, rangers, sorcerers, warlocks, and wizards. Duration, concentration up to 1 minute. It's called Breathtaking Wind. You target a creature with a blast of wintry air. That creature must make a successful con save or become unable to speak or cast spells with a vocal component for the duration of the spell. So that's kind of cool, actually. It's one of those things where the effect isn't maybe what you would immediately think it would be. And it kind of shows the versatility of ice or winter-themed magic, because a lot of times I think when you're thinking of winter magic or ice-based magic, sort of the only thing you can ever think of is sort of, okay, well, whatever part is affected by the spell becomes frozen. That's ice magic, right? Well, yeah, it is. But something simple, like you make someone cold and it takes their breath away a little bit, and they can't do anything with the verbal component. I mean, it's beautiful. It's simple, and shows the versatility of this theme without making it useless or cliche. Here's Ice Hammer, second level conjuration for a cleric and ranger. Duration concentration up to 1 hour. When you cast Ice Hammer, a warhammer fashioned from ice appears in your hands. This weapon functions as a standard warhammer in all ways, and it deals an additional 1d10 cold damage on a hit. So, as opposed to what I just read, the breathtaking cold, or breathtaking wind, whatever it was called, this one is very cliche, and it's very sort of obvious and direct. You suddenly have an ice hammer in your hand, and you do your normal damage plus 1d10 cold damage. And it depends on how you feel about that sort of thing, and kind of how you want your magic to appear in your world, I think. For me, I think this is a little bit over the top. I feel like I probably wouldn't use it unless I was using it purely for the mechanics of it, which, believe me, I'm not above that at all. So, but thematically, it's a little bit much. I tend to find, for whatever reason, magic that just makes things appear in your hands, for whatever reason, I feel like that's over the top. I don't know why, but maybe I just haven't seen it in movies enough. But just suddenly for you to be holding an ice hammer, that just, to me, that doesn't really hit for me. That doesn't quite get there. But I do appreciate that additional 1d10 cold damage. I mean, absolutely, I appreciate that. And I think in a video game, I would totally use this. I wouldn't have a problem with using an ice hammer in a video game. It's just, I guess, the idea of manifesting an entire hammer from nothing is just too much for me to imagine. Although, freezing a town by killing a beast by freezing it to death in a rune circle, for whatever reason, that totally seems to work for me. Here's a Wintry Glide, fourth level conjuration for druids. Upon casting Wintry Glide, you can travel via ice or snow without crossing the intervening space. If you are adjacent to a mass of ice or snow, you can enter it by expending 5 feet of movement. You can immediately exit from that mass of ice or snow at any point within 500 feet. It's part of the contiguous mass of ice or snow. This is a little bit like shadow travel, which I kind of talked about a little bit, I think, in the Dreamlands episode, because I really felt like the cats of Lovecraft essentially have this ability, but for shadows and dark spaces. And I think in terms of default spells, like really easy thematic spells, I think this is a perfect one. This is a great one. Your winter-based wizard really ought to be able to do this, right? Step into a bank of snow and come out another bank of snow, or rather the same bank of snow, 50 feet away or something. It's just one of those elemental magics that any character with any elemental theme should have. Just as a dryad ought to be able to step into a tree and then step out of another tree. Or a Lovecraftian cat should be able to step into a shadow and then step outside of a different shadow space. It's just kind of a must-have, and that's fortunate because they do provide. Skipping up to sixth level spells, Transmutation. This is the only sixth, so this is the highest one. Druid, Sorcerer, Warlock, Wizard. Concentration up to 1 hour. This spell invokes the deepest part of night on the winter solstice. You target a 40-foot radius, 60-foot high cylinder centered on a point within a range, which is plunged into darkness and unbearable cold. All creatures in the area when you cast the spell and at the beginning of your turn must make a successful constitution saving throw or take 1d6 cold damage and gain 1 level of exhaustion. Creatures immune to cold are also immune to exhaustion, as are creatures wearing cold weather gear or otherwise adapted to cold. As a bonus action, you can move the center of the effect 20 feet. So, on the surface, this obviously just kind of sounds like magical darkness, but it's got that added cold element, which the very beginning of reading some of these spells, I said, oh, isn't it cool that one of these has an unexpected effect? And in a weird way, I feel like this is really, really kind of obvious. This is an obvious effect, the cold damage. But it's married with something that you, when you first start reading it, you think, okay, this is just magical darkness, not that big of a deal. But actually, it's pretty good. It's a 40-foot radius of cold damage on anything that's not used to the cold. And it can move. I like this one. This is very cool. And I like the entire publication, and I think it's worth looking at. I think it cost me $3.95 or $4.95, something like that. It's 12 pages. I don't know how that calculates. I don't know what the threshold is there. But for me, the value was clear, because it provides a really robust theme for a winter adventure, and that's what I'm always looking for. I'm always trying to find that perfect winter setting to take the adventurers up north into the snow, just because I enjoy that theme, really. That's all it is. Now there is quite a big adventure out there, not published by Kobold Press, but by Frog God Games, called the Northland Saga. And I guess I'll have to talk about that at some point, because in terms of winter content, that's got quite a lot of it. But this is a good start. This is if you're looking, just as I say, for more or less a player guide for an adventure coming up that is going to be set in the wintry north, or wintry south, a winter setting, then this has got a lot of the thematic elements that you're going to want to throw at your players to kind of get everyone on the same page in terms of abilities, and just kind of like to get to know the world, right? That there might be a god out there that's trying to envelop the whole world with winter, because, hey, why not? And here are some of the kinds of magics that you might have heard of in stories, or maybe you're learning as a cleric, or as a wizard, or as a sorcerer, whatever. Well, I guess you wouldn't be learning it if you were a sorcerer, but you know what I mean. So it's quite a good publication, highly recommended. It's just a pleasure to read. Now, I've already talked about the Genius Guide to Ice Magic in a previous episode, but what I will note here, because it's worth noting, is that there are no cantrips in the Kobold Press publication. So they've got 1 through 6 spells, as I said, with really only 1 6th-level spell. And so they stop short. You know, there's no 7, 8, or 9, and there's no 0. So if you want a cantrip, the Genius Guide Ice Magic is probably the one to look to for ideas there. And then if you want 7, 8, 9 level spells, then you pretty much have to go with the Genius Guide. Would I get both? Absolutely, I would get both. Together, these two things, they're perfect. I mean, they're exactly what you would need, really. I should probably also mention briefly that the Deep Magic, Winter Magic, is for 5th edition, and Genius Guide is for Pathfinder 3.5. So there's maybe some minor conversion that you might feel that you have to do. I don't bother, to be honest. It seems to work for me. Ice Magic, I've given that to players in both 5th and 3.5. It doesn't really affect things for me, but maybe you would want to convert it or something. It depends on the level of detail that you go into, I guess, on your calculations. But there's not a whole lot in the Genius Guide that actually requires conversion. If you read over it, you'll pretty much, I think, unless you're a lot more strict than certainly me, I think you'll probably find it fine. I mean, like their cantrip, for instance, create ice. Range, close, 25 feet, 5 feet per 2 levels. The spell generates a sheet of clear, pure ice, enough ice to generate 1 5-foot square, which is treated as difficult terrain. This ice melts after 1 hour, and that's it. So, I mean, that's very 5th edition. There's nothing in there that you would think, oh, that's that's completely overpowered or too detailed for 5th or anything like that. So Genius Guide and Kobold Press, I think, are two fantastic resources for your winter and ice-themed campaign. You should look at them. In the future, I will talk about the Northland Saga, maybe. Maybe not. We'll see. I have to go start a fire, so thanks for listening. I will talk to you next time. That's it for this week's episode. Thank you very much for listening. My name is Klaatu. You can reach me via email at klaatu@member.fsf.org. You can also usually catch me in IRC as not Klaatu. I'm on the Freenode network. Thank you very much for listening, and I'll talk to you next time.